There's a moment from 1998 that Microsoft hoped you would forget. Bill Gates was sitting in a conference room surrounded by executives, and someone brought up Linux. At the time, it was a hobbyist project, a curiosity, something a handful of engineers used because they enjoyed tinkering. And according to people who were in that room, Gates dismissed it. Not aggressively, not with concern. He dismissed it the way you dismiss a child's drawing when you're running a Fortune 500 company. It wasn't even worth the energy of a real opinion. 28 years later, Linux runs 96% of the world's web servers. It powers every single one of the top 500 supercomputers on Earth. It is the foundation of Android, which dominates the global smartphone market. It controls the infrastructure of every major cloud platform, including Microsoft's own Azure. And it is now making serious, measurable inroads into the one territory Microsoft always believed was untouchable, the desktop. Bill Gates built an empire on the idea that you needed Windows, that it was the only serious option, that everything else was a toy or a science experiment. And for a very long time, he was right. But something has shifted. Not gradually, not theoretically. It is happening right now in measurable numbers, in government policy decisions, in corporate IT departments, and in the choices ordinary people are making when they sit down at their computers. And Linux is pulling off what Windows failed to do. And the thing it's pulling off is so simple, so fundamental, that it exposes everything Microsoft got wrong over the last decade. Linux is giving people control over their own machines. Real control. Not the illusion of control wrapped in a terms of service agreement, not the kind of control where you can change your wallpaper but can't stop your operating system from uploading your data to a server you've never heard of. Actual, complete, unrestricted ownership of the computer you paid for. And that distinction, which sounds philosophical until you live with it, is now driving one of the most significant shifts in personal computing since the smartphone revolution. To understand why this matters, you have to understand what Microsoft used to be. Because the company that Bill Gates built in the 1980s and 1990s is fundamentally different from the company that Satya Nadella runs today. And the difference explains why Linux is winning a battle that Windows didn't even realize it was fighting. In the beginning, Microsoft's entire pitch was empowerment. That was the word they used in their marketing, in their internal memos, in their investor presentations. The personal computer was going to put power in the hands of ordinary people. You didn't need to be a programmer. You didn't need to work at a university. You could buy a machine, install Windows, and you owned a tool that could do anything. Write documents, build spreadsheets, connect to the internet, run a small business, educate your children. The computer was yours, and Windows was the thing that made it work. And this wasn't just marketing. It was largely true. Windows 95 was a genuine revolution. Windows XP, whatever. Its flaws was a rock-solid operating system that millions of people used productively for over a decade. Some businesses were still running XP well into the 2020s because it simply worked. It did what they needed, it didn't get in the way, and it didn't demand anything from them beyond the initial purchase price. That was the deal. You bought Windows. You owned Windows. It sat on your hard drive and it ran your applications and it didn't have opinions about how you should use your own computer. It didn't suggest things. It didn't nudge you toward subscriptions. It didn't quietly upload screenshots of everything you did to a cloud server for an AI to analyze later. It was a tool. You picked it up, you used it, you put it down. That deal is dead. And the moment you understand that it's dead, you understand why Linux is surging. Because Linux still honors that original deal. Linux is the last major operating system on Earth that treats your computer like it actually belongs to you. Let me walk you through exactly how that deal died. Because it didn't happen overnight. It happened in stages, each one a little more aggressive than the last, each one pushing the boundary of what users would tolerate. And every single stage made Linux a little more attractive to the people who were paying attention. The first crack appeared with Windows 8. The interface was redesigned around tiles and touch, which made sense for tablets but was bewildering on desktops. Users who had spent years building muscle memory around the start menu suddenly found themselves staring at a screen that looked like a smartphone had exploded across their monitor. This wasn't just a design choice, it was a signal. Microsoft was no longer designing Windows for the people who used it. They were designing it for the market they wanted to capture. The user's comfort was secondary to the company's strategy, but Windows 8 was recoverable. It was annoying, not threatening. The real damage started with Windows 10, and it started with a single word that Microsoft used constantly in their communications: service. Windows 10 wasn't a product anymore. It was a service. Microsoft said this repeatedly, proudly, as if it were an upgrade. But think about what that word actually means. A product is something you buy and own. A service is something you subscribe to, something that can change at any time, something where the provider sets the terms. When Microsoft started calling Windows a service, they were telling you, in plain language, that you no longer owned your operating system. You were being granted ongoing access to it, under conditions that Microsoft could modify whenever they chose, and modify they did. Windows 10 introduced forced updates. Not suggested updates, not recommended updates. Forced updates that would install, whether you wanted them or not, that would restart your computer in the middle of your work, that would sometimes break your drivers, corrupt your files, or disable your peripherals. You had no choice. The service was being serviced, and your preferences were irrelevant. Then came the telemetry. Windows 10 began collecting data about how you used your computer, what applications you ran, how long you spent on different tasks, what you searched for, what websites you visited. Microsoft assured users this was for improvement purposes, to make Windows better. But the sheer volume of data being collected and the difficulty of turning it off completely told a different story. Your computer was now reporting on you, not to you, on you, to Microsoft. And then Windows 11 arrived, and whatever pretense remained was stripped away entirely. Windows 11 didn't just continue the trends of Windows 10. It accelerated them with a kind of corporate confidence that borders on contempt for the user base. The hardware requirements alone were a declaration of intent. Your computer now needed TPM 2.0, a specific generation of processor, a minimum amount of RAM that excluded millions of perfectly functional machines. Computers that ran Windows 10 without any issues were suddenly declared obsolete. Not because they couldn't handle the workload, because Microsoft decided they didn't qualify. Think about what that means from a user's perspective. You have a computer. It works. It does everything you need. And Microsoft tells you that you can't have the new operating system because your hardware doesn't meet their arbitrary requirements. Not performance requirements, security theater requirements. Your 5-year-old laptop with a perfectly capable processor is excluded because it doesn't have a chip that most users will never consciously interact with. But the hardware gatekeeping was just the beginning. Windows 11 requires a Microsoft account. Let me say that again because people still don't fully absorb it. You cannot set up Windows 11 normally without creating or signing into a Microsoft account. Your local computer, the physical machine sitting on your desk, requires you to authenticate with a cloud service controlled by Microsoft before you can use it. This is not a minor inconvenience. This is a fundamental restructuring of the relationship between you and your computer. You no longer access your machine directly. You access it through Microsoft. They are the gatekeeper. They are the intermediary. And everything that flows from that intermediary relationship, the data collection, the service integration, the subscription nudging, all of it depends on you accepting that your computer is no longer fully yours. And it gets worse. Microsoft introduced Windows Recall, a feature that takes periodic screenshots of everything you do on your computer and stores them for an AI to analyze. Everything. Your emails, your banking, your private conversations, your medical searches, your personal documents, all of it captured, stored, and indexed. Microsoft positioned this as a productivity feature, a way to help you find things you'd forgotten. But the technical reality is that your operating system is now conducting continuous surveillance of your activity and building a searchable database of your entire digital life. When Windows Recall was announced, the backlash was intense. Security researchers pointed out the catastrophic implications of storing a visual record of everything a user does. If that database is compromised, and databases do get compromised, the attacker wouldn't just have your passwords, they'd have screenshots of you entering those passwords. They'd have images of your private documents. They'd have a visual history of every sensitive thing you've ever done on your computer. Microsoft temporarily pulled the feature back, adjusted some settings, and then reintroduced it. Because the trajectory is clear. This is where Windows is going. Not toward user empowerment, not toward privacy, not toward giving you more control, toward turning your computer into a data collection terminal that you happen to be allowed to use for your own purposes, as long as those purposes don't conflict with Microsoft's business model. And this is exactly why Bill Gates should be paying attention to what Linux is doing right now. Because while Microsoft was busy turning Windows into a surveillance platform dressed up as an operating system, Linux was quietly doing the one thing that Windows systematically abandoned, respecting the user. When you install Linux, no one asks you to create an account with a cloud service. No one forces you to connect to the internet. No one collects telemetry about how you use your machine. No one takes screenshots of your activity. No one nudges you toward subscriptions. No one locks you out of your own hardware because it doesn't have the right chip. You download the operating system. You install it. It's yours. Completely, unreservedly, permanently yours. You can modify anything. The desktop environment, the file manager, the kernel itself, the way programs are installed, the way the system boots, the way memory is managed, the way network connections are handled. If you don't like something, you change it. If you don't want something, you remove it. If you want something that doesn't exist, you build it or you find someone who already has. This level of freedom sounds abstract until you experience it. And then it becomes addictive. Because once you've used a computer that does exactly what you tell it and nothing else, going back to a system that constantly interrupts you with suggestions, notifications, advertisements, and mandatory updates feels intolerable. It feels like renting something that should be yours. And let's talk about performance, because this is where the difference becomes tangible, even for people who don't care about philosophy or privacy. Linux is, in measurable terms, dramatically more efficient than Windows. Take a computer from 2018. Maybe it has 4 gigabytes of RAM, a modest processor, a standard hard drive. Try running Windows 11 on it. If you even manage to install it past the hardware requirements, the experience will be painful. Slow boots, laggy interfaces, background processes consuming resources you didn't ask them to consume. The computer feels old because the operating system is making it old. Now install Linux on the same machine. Choose a lightweight distribution like Linux Mint with the XFCE desktop or Lubuntu, or even a more featured environment like KDE Plasma. Boot the machine, watch what happens. The system comes up fast. The interface is responsive. Applications open quickly. The computer feels new again, not because you changed the hardware, because you removed the operating system that was strangling it. This is not an exaggeration. This is a documented, reproducible experience that millions of people have had. And the reason it works is simple. Linux distributions are built to be efficient. They don't run dozens of background services you never asked for. They don't phone home to cloud servers. They don't index your entire hard drive for an AI feature you didn't want. They use the hardware you have to run the software you chose. And they don't waste a single cycle on anything else. And for organizations, this efficiency translates directly into money. A university that needs to deploy 500 computers doesn't need to buy 500 Windows licenses. They install Linux for free. A startup building cloud infrastructure doesn't need to budget for server licensing. They deploy Linux and spend that money on development instead. A government agency running older hardware doesn't need to replace thousands of machines because Windows 11 demands newer processors. They install Linux and those machines keep working for years. The cost savings are not marginal. Real-world data consistently shows that Linux environments cost significantly less to maintain than Windows environments, sometimes half the cost per system, sometimes even less. And that's before you account for the licensing fees that Windows charges and Linux doesn't. But let's address the argument that has kept more people on Windows than any other. The argument that was, until very recently, essentially unanswerable. Gaming. For decades, gaming was Microsoft's trump card. If you wanted to play the latest titles, you needed Windows. Period. Game developers built for DirectX, Microsoft's proprietary graphics framework. Anti-cheat systems were designed around Windows internals. The entire PC gaming ecosystem was a Microsoft ecosystem, and Linux users were locked out. That is no longer true. The turning point came from an unlikely source. Valve. Corporation, the company behind Steam, the world's largest PC gaming platform, decided to build a handheld gaming device, the Steam Deck. And they decided to run it on Linux, not Windows. Linux. And to make that work, they invested heavily in a compatibility layer called Proton, which allows Windows games to run on Linux with minimal or no modification. The results were remarkable. Thousands of games that were designed exclusively for Windows became playable on Linux almost overnight. Not all of them. Not perfectly in every case. But the list of compatible titles grew rapidly, and the performance was often comparable to native Windows performance. Sometimes it was actually better, because Linux wasn't burdening the hardware with the same overhead that Windows imposes. This mattered enormously, because gaming was the last major barrier preventing mainstream users from switching. If you could game on Linux, and you could now, then the final excuse for tolerating Windows' increasingly hostile behavior disappeared. You didn't need Windows anymore. Not for work, where LibreOffice and cloud-based tools handle most tasks. Not for web browsing, where Firefox and Chrome work identically on Linux. Not for development, where Linux has always been the preferred platform. And now, not even for gaming. And this brings us to something that is happening right now, in 2026, that most people aren't aware of yet. Governments are switching. Denmark's government announced plans to move away from Microsoft, including both Windows and Office 365, in favor of Linux and open source alternatives like LibreOffice. This isn't a pilot program. This isn't an experiment. This is a national policy decision driven by concerns about sovereignty, cost, and control. When a government runs its entire infrastructure on software controlled by a single American corporation, that government has a dependency problem. If Microsoft changes its pricing, its terms, its data handling practices, or its feature set, the government has to comply. It has no leverage and no alternative, unless it switches to Linux, where the government itself controls the software stack and answers to no external corporate interest. Denmark isn't alone. India has Boss Linux, a government-developed distribution designed for official use. China has been investing in Linux-based operating systems for government and military use for years. Germany's Schleswig-Holstein state government committed to switching from Microsoft Office to LibreOffice and from Windows to Linux across its entire administration. France's Gendarmerie, the National Police Force, switched to Linux years ago and reported significant cost savings and improved security. This is not a fringe movement. This is a systematic global reassessment of whether governments and institutions should be dependent on proprietary software controlled by foreign corporations. And the conclusion, increasingly, is no. Now let's talk about the thing that Microsoft absolutely does not want you thinking about: security. In 2025, Windows accumulated over 11,000 documented security vulnerabilities. That is an 845% increase from the previous year. Let that number sink in. 845%. Not a slight uptick, not a gradual trend. A near ninefold explosion in the number of ways attackers could compromise a Windows system. And these aren't theoretical vulnerabilities that only affect lab environments. These are real-world security holes that are actively exploited by attackers. Some of them were in core system components, some were in the update mechanism itself, some were in features that Microsoft forced onto users without their consent. The updates themselves have become a security risk. In January 2026, Microsoft released KB5074119, a mandatory update that caused widespread system failures. Devices wouldn't boot. Applications crashed. Entire workflows were disrupted. And this wasn't an isolated incident. In October 2025, KB5066835 caused NVIDIA graphics cards to lose half their gaming performance. GPUs that had been running games at 60 or 70 frames per second suddenly dropped to 30. The problem was so severe that NVIDIA had to release an emergency driver to undo the damage Microsoft's update had caused. This is the security model that Microsoft offers: a system where mandatory updates can break your computer, tank your performance, and introduce new vulnerabilities, and you have no ability to opt out. You cannot refuse the update. You cannot delay it indefinitely. You cannot inspect the code to verify that. It's safe. You take what Microsoft gives you when they give it to you, and you hope for the best. Linux operates on an entirely different model. The code is open. Every line of every update is publicly available for inspection. Thousands of developers and security researchers worldwide examine changes before and after they're released. When vulnerabilities are discovered, patches often appear within hours, not months. And critically, you control when and whether to apply those patches. The system respects your authority over your own machine. Linux also uses a fundamentally different permission model. Programs run with limited privileges by default. They cannot access system-critical files or processes without explicit user authorization. This means that even if a piece of malware manages to run on a Linux system, it's contained within a limited sandbox. It can't spread through the system the way it can on Windows, where legacy compatibility requirements mean that programs often have far more access than they should. And here's the part that should genuinely alarm anyone still running Windows as their primary operating system: the direction is getting worse, not better. Microsoft is not responding to the backlash by giving users more control. They're responding by doubling down. Every new feature announcement, every new update, every new product launch pushes further in the direction of cloud dependency, data collection, and corporate control. The Windows 365 link, a device Microsoft released in early 2025, is a perfect example. It's a small computer that costs $349 and has no local storage. None. Every application, every file, every piece of data lives on Microsoft's cloud servers. You're not buying a computer, you're buying a terminal. A screen and a keyboard that connects to a computer that Microsoft owns, that Microsoft controls, and that Microsoft can modify, restrict, or shut down at any time. This is the future Microsoft is building. Not a future where you own a computer, a future where you rent access to computing, where the files on your screen aren't on your hard drive, they're on Microsoft's servers. Where the applications you use aren't installed on your machine, they're streamed from Microsoft's cloud. Where your entire digital existence is mediated, monitored, and monetized by a corporation whose primary obligation is to its shareholders, not to you. And if that sounds extreme, look at what's already happened. Windows already requires a Microsoft account. Windows already collects telemetry. Windows already forces updates. Windows already takes screenshots for AI analysis. Windows already nudges you toward Microsoft 365. Subscriptions. Every one of these steps was considered extreme when it was first introduced, and every one of them is now normalized. The next step, whatever it is, will follow the same pattern. Initial outrage, gradual acceptance, total normalization. Linux represents the opposite trajectory. Not because Linux developers are morally superior to Microsoft employees, but because the structure of open source development doesn't allow the kind of enshittification that proprietary platforms inevitably undergo. There's no board of directors demanding quarterly revenue growth from the operating system. There's no shareholder pressure to monetize user behavior. There's no incentive to degrade the product in order to upsell a premium version. Linux is built by people who want a good operating system. That's it. That's the entire motivation. And because the code is open, if any developer tried to introduce telemetry or forced updates or cloud dependencies, the community would fork the project and create a version without those features. This has happened before. It will happen again. The structure of open source development makes user-hostile changes self-correcting in a way that proprietary development never can. And this brings us to Bill Gates. Because the irony of this entire situation is almost poetic. Bill Gates built Microsoft on the promise that personal computing would empower individuals. That was the dream, a computer on every desk and in every home. Not a terminal connected to someone else's computer, not a data collection device that reports your behavior to a corporation. A personal computer, yours, under your control, serving your needs. Linux is now the operating system that fulfills that original promise. The promise that Microsoft made and then systematically broke. Linux puts a computer on your desk that is genuinely, completely, uncompromisingly yours. It doesn't report to anyone. It doesn't serve anyone's interests but your own. It doesn't expire. It doesn't lock you out. And it doesn't charge you for the privilege of using your own machine. Bill Gates should look at Linux and see the fulfillment of his own original vision. The vision that his own company abandoned in pursuit of cloud revenue, subscription models, and data monetization. The vision that Linux kept alive when Microsoft threw it away. The question going forward is not whether Linux will replace Windows. Windows is too deeply embedded in enterprise infrastructure, in gaming ecosystems, in educational licensing agreements, and in the sheer inertia of billions of users who know how to use it and don't want to learn something new. Windows isn't going anywhere, but the question that matters is different. The question that matters is how many people will realize that the computer they paid for doesn't have to work the way Microsoft tells them it should work. How many people will discover that there is an operating system that treats them as the owner of their machine, not as a user of Microsoft's platform? How many people will install Linux on an old laptop out of curiosity and then realize they can never go back? That number is growing. It's growing in Denmark and Germany and India and France. It's growing in server rooms and supercomputing centers and cloud infrastructure. It's growing on Steam Decks and hobbyist desktops and repurposed business laptops. It's growing every time Microsoft pushes another update that breaks something, every time a new telemetry feature is discovered, every time a user looks at their start menu and sees an advertisement for a product they didn't ask for in an operating system they paid for. And here is the part that should keep Microsoft executives up at night. Every person who switches to Linux and stays is a person who is never coming back. Because once you've experienced computing on your terms, on a system that answers to you and only you, the idea of going back to a system that treats you as a product, a data source, a revenue stream, that idea becomes unthinkable. Bill Gates built the world's most successful software company on the idea that computers should serve people. Linux took that idea and actually kept its promise. And that is what Windows failed to do, not because it couldn't, because it chose not to. Because quarterly earnings reports matter more than user trust. Because shareholder value matters more than personal sovereignty. Because the cloud is more profitable than the desktop. Microsoft made its choice. Linux offers another one. And every day, more people are taking it. But let's go deeper into something most channels won't touch, and what Bill Gates himself has actually said about Linux over the years, and how those statements reveal exactly how Microsoft lost its way. In 2001, Bill Gates called Linux and the open source movement a threat to intellectual property. He didn't frame it as competition. He framed it as an ideological problem. In his view, software should be proprietary because that's what incentivizes innovation. If anyone can copy and modify the code, where's the motivation to build something great? That was his argument. And on the surface, it sounded reasonable. But 25 years later, look at what actually happened. The proprietary model incentivized something, but it wasn't innovation. It incentivized monetization of the user. It incentivized finding new ways to extract value from the person sitting in front of the computer. It incentivized telemetry, forced accounts, subscription nudging, and surveillance features. The proprietary model didn't produce a better operating system. It produced a more profitable one. And there's a critical difference between those two things. Meanwhile, the open source model that Gates dismissed as a threat produced the operating system that runs the internet. It produced the kernel that powers every Android phone. It produced the platform that the world's most powerful supercomputers depend on. It produced desktop environments that are now polished enough to rival anything Microsoft or Apple has ever shipped. It produced all of this without charging a single user a licensing fee, without collecting a byte of telemetry, without forcing a single update on anyone. The model Gates, called unsustainable, has sustained itself for over 3 decades and now powers more computing infrastructure than Windows ever has. The model he called the future turned his own operating system into something his original customers barely recognize. There's a leaked internal Microsoft memo from 1998, often referred to as the Halloween documents, where Microsoft engineers analyzed the open source threat in detail. The conclusions were striking. They acknowledged that open source software often matched or exceeded the quality of commercial alternatives. They acknowledged that the development model was effective and fast-moving, and they recommended a strategy not of competing on quality, but of using proprietary protocols and lock-in to prevent users from switching. Read that again. Microsoft's own internal strategy was not to build something better. It was to make leaving harder. That mentality didn't start with Windows 11. It was there from the beginning, and it explains everything that followed. The mandatory Microsoft accounts, the tight integration with OneDrive and Microsoft 365, the hardware requirements that artificially limit which computers can run the new operating system, the forced updates that make it nearly impossible to stay on an older version, all of it is lock-in. All of it is the strategy those engineers recommended in 1998, refined and expanded across 2 decades. And here's where this becomes personal for every person watching this video. Because lock-in isn't just a business strategy, it's a tax on your time, your money, and your autonomy. Every hour you spend figuring out how to disable a feature you didn't want is a tax. Every dollar you spend on new hardware because Windows 11 rejected your perfectly good laptop is a tax. Every moment of frustration when an update breaks, your workflow is a tax. Every notification pushing you toward a Microsoft 365 subscription is a tax. You're paying for the privilege of using an operating system that increasingly prioritizes its own interests over yours. Linux charges no tax, not because it's charity, because the structure doesn't require it. The people who build Linux don't need to monetize you. They don't need your data. They don't need you to subscribe to anything. They need nothing from you at all, except perhaps the occasional contribution back to the project, if you have the skills and the inclination. And even that is optional. This structural difference creates a fundamentally different kind of software. Software that gets better because the people building it want it to be better, not because a product manager determined that the next feature would increase quarterly engagement metrics by 3%. Software that stays stable because stability matters to the developers who use it every day, not software that changes constantly because change drives App Store downloads and creates opportunities for new subscription prompts. And this leads to the most underreported aspect of the Linux revolution, the cultural shift. Something has changed in how ordinary, non-technical people talk about their computers. 5 years ago, if someone complained about Windows, the universal response was, "What's the alternative?" There wasn't one. You could use Mac, which costs 2 to 3 times as much and comes with its own set of corporate restrictions. Or you could use Linux, which most people associated with command line terminals and a learning curve that would make a graduate student weep. That perception is outdated by at least 5 years. Modern Linux distributions like Linux Mint, Fedora, Pop, OS, and Zorin OS are, in terms of daily usability, indistinguishable from Windows for the vast majority of tasks that the vast majority of people perform. You click icons, you open browsers, you write documents, you watch videos, you manage files, you check email. The experience is visually polished, the interfaces are intuitive, and the workflow is natural. Scientists, their teachers and retirees and small business owners and students and artists and writers and parents who just want a computer that works without fighting them every step of the way. They're people who got tired of seeing advertisements in their start menu. People who got tired of their computer restarting for updates in the middle of an important project. People who got tired of being asked to create a Microsoft account for the 5th time. People who got tired of feeling like a guest on their own machine. And when these people switch, something remarkable happens. They discover that their old computer, the one Windows told them was obsolete, runs beautifully. They discover that their new operating system never interrupts them with notifications they didn't ask for. They discover that installing software is often easier than on Windows, not harder. They discover that their system doesn't slow down over time the way Windows does, because there are no background processes silently accumulating, no registry entries degrading performance, no bloatware reinstalling itself after every update. They discover, in short, that computing can be pleasant. Not tolerable, not acceptable, pleasant. And that discovery is irreversible. This is what Bill Gates should be reacting to, Not the market share numbers, which still favor Windows on the desktop, not the enterprise deployments, which are still overwhelmingly Microsoft dependent. He should be reacting to the emotional shift. The fact that, for a growing number of people, Windows is no longer the default assumption. It's a choice. And increasingly, it's a choice people are reconsidering. Because the promise Bill Gates made in the 1990s, a computer on every desk serving every person, that promise was beautiful. It was genuinely transformative. It changed the world. But the company he built broke that promise. It turned the personal computer into a corporate terminal. It turned the user into a data source. It turned the desktop into a storefront. And it did this so gradually, so incrementally, that most people didn't notice until the start menu itself started showing them advertisements for products they never asked about. Linux didn't break that promise. Linux can't break that promise because the structure won't allow it. And that's not a technical advantage. That's not a feature comparison. That's a fundamental difference in what the software exists to do. Windows exists to serve Microsoft. Linux exists to serve you. Bill Gates knows this. Whether he'll ever say it out loud is a different question. But the code doesn't lie. The business model doesn't lie. The trajectory doesn't lie. And the millions of people quietly installing Linux on their machines aren't waiting for Bill Gates to react. They've already made their decision. The only question left is whether you'll make yours.